Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we interview people who have built companies, sold companies, taken companies public, raised funds, and are making a significant impact in the world today. My name is Nathan Bird, and I'll be your host for today. Our special guest, Scott Lomu, has years of experience as an entrepreneur and has recently founded Element United, a company focused on changing the way we extract value from the ground and converting our real-world assets to the blockchain, helping minimize the environmental impacts we are having on the earth through mining. Really interested to get into the details. Obviously, you could probably elaborate more on what we just touched on, so feel free to do so, and thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me, Nathan. It's a pleasure to be with you today and to talk about some of these things that we're doing, and it's exciting and it's fun, and I think it's one of these projects where everything that I've done over the past 10, 12 years has all led to this, and so I'm very passionate about it. Even though our company is only a couple of years old, I feel like it's been building for 10, 12 years, and so everything has led to what we're doing at Element United, and man, it's a what a crazy time to be involved in blockchain and crypto, right?
Yes.
We're in the middle of this so-called crypto winter, and it's funny because when we talk about what we're trying to do, one of the things I spend most of my time trying to do is to separate the idea of blockchain technology from the currency, because most people, they hear crypto and they freak out and they go, oh, wow, you know, crypto's down or crypto's a scam. And so it's fun. It's fun to explain this to people. And I love being an ambassador for all of this good that we're trying to accomplish. And so thank you for having me on here.
Yes.
And giving me a stage to talk about what it is we're trying to do and how we can all be involved in solving some massive problems that exist in the world that I think a lot of people don't know are out there. So,
you're
familiar with like OUR, the whole Tim Ballard thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everywhere I go, I'm involved in a lot of mastermind groups. I'm involved in a lot of other groups. And everywhere I go, Tim Ballard pops up on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And he's up there and he's talking about child sex slavery and all these things. And I didn't know that was a problem, right? And I don't think any of the people that are in these rooms, I'm sure the vast majority of them have no idea that that was a problem until Tim got up and shared his stories. Now he's got this movie out. You know, Jim Caviezel's playing him in movies. And he's done such an effective job of letting people know about this horrific problem that exists in the world. Essentially, at Element United, we're trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't think most people understand where the components in their electric vehicles or their phones or their computers, where it comes from. At what cost are they able to have this technology? And I've seen it firsthand. My path is very similar to Tim's path. He saw firsthand what was happening and decided to do something about it. I also saw what was happening firsthand in the mining world in West Africa, and now we're deciding to do something about it. So thanks for this platform.
Yes, absolutely. I think everyone needs a platform, and we have a lot of technology that we can take advantage of. So you said a few things. We've got passion, number one. So we're going to start down that road right now. And then as an entrepreneur, you're solving problems. And we'll get into the exact problem that you're solving and also why you are so passionate about that, okay?
Awesome.
So this first tier is a question I always like to ask people is, what is entrepreneurship to you?
It is seeing a problem and doing your best to solve it. I think, you know, from an early age, I had a job early on. My dad died when I was a teenager, left my mom a widow with 8 kids. And there's a difference between just getting a job to make money and entrepreneurship. I think entrepreneurs are visionary people. They are able to see problems, and then they have the courage or the stupidity to try to go and solve that problem. And sometimes in solving that problem, it's risky. There's financial risk. There's risk to, you know, what you think people are going to think about you. Because I remember there's a mind shift that has to happen. I remember when I was young and I see these people that were like, oh no, I'm going to go do this. And I was the guy that was like, their entrepreneurship, their belief that they could go do something was intimidating to me.
Okay.
And so I was the guy that was like, ah, oh, you can't do that. Who does that guy think he is, right? And this is like, you know, when I'm like my early 20s or late teens, I'm like, oh, who does this guy think he is? He's going to go out and solve that problem, you know, because I didn't have the ability and I had too much fear to go out and do things myself. So I was that guy that like threw rocks at everybody else who was out there trying to do something. And then I had to switch. It was when the Olympics were here in Salt Lake, and I had this brother-in-law, and he's just like, dude, we should do a little business for the Olympics. And we found a massive need that there were no hotel rooms anywhere. And so we said, hey, look, what if we just called like apartment complexes and hotel rooms and had them rent out to us their fully furnished rooms? And that was where I was like, whoa, you mean you're going to call like Marriott and da-da-da and all these? And that was where it clicked for me. And I thought, oh, this guy's thinking big. Like this guy's thinking about calling these. And we're just young. We're like 20, you know, or early 20s. Let's, you know, and he's thinking, let's go out and we're going to contact all these big companies who are coming into the Olympics. And that was intimidating to me. And it just clicked one night. And I'm like, no, if you want to do something big, you got to like get over this fear. You got to like believe you can do it. And we made hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars by just calling up apartments that had furnished units. And then we put ads in the paper, hey, rent out your basement. You know, it was like Airbnb before it was Airbnb. And we didn't know what we were doing, but it worked like crazy. And all of a sudden, we're filling rooms for Anheuser-Busch and big multinational companies are calling my cell phone, right? My little flip Sprint phone, because yes. That's the number I put in the ads. And it was scary talking to these like big corporate people. And finally I just said, no, you got to just man up and do it. And that's where everything changed for me. So entrepreneurship is looking at a problem. And that's the problem that we initially wanted to solve, was nobody has any place to stay here in Utah for the Olympics. And then just believing and having the courage to go out and do it. And so I admire entrepreneurs. Even in my evolution over the past 25 years, I still surround myself with entrepreneurs, and I'm still awed by them. I go to these mastermind groups, and I see what they're doing, and I'm just like, dude, how did you do that? What gave you the courage to go out and do that? So I'm still evolving. I still have these, you know, at times these things that are from my childhood, like, you know, money is scarce. You know, these things you learn when you grow up poor.
Yep.
That money's for other people, for rich people, and it's funny because I still find myself, you know, in my mid to late 40s, fighting some of the things from your youth. And so I love entrepreneurs. I love their spirit to where they just feel like they can go out and do anything. And I no longer, you know, try to break them down. Now I sit with them and I want them to teach me. And it's funny because when you're around entrepreneurs, you think you can do anything because you've just seen five guys that went out and just made tens of millions of dollars with these crazy ideas. And you go, man, if that guy did it, I can do it too. So
yeah.
So yeah.
That makes total sense.
I don't know if that answered your question.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think everybody has their own take, and perspective is really important. And then also I would say, what to your point, it's about the belief systems that were installed into you. And that typically will come through the subconscious, which sometimes you don't always have control over. And understanding how that subconscious is creating your identity of who you continually think you are. So it's important to really understand and look at yourself from an objective point of view, and then be able to shift perspectives and make a quantum leap. Because that's in essence what you're doing, you've done, and every entrepreneur does. We make quantum leaps. We go from A to F.
Yeah.
Right? So it's interesting how things can shift. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the problem that you're solving right now, because that was a problem that you had in the past of being able to create real estate or have people that needed places to stay. That was a great problem. But now let's talk about Element United, the problem you're solving, the passion that you've been able to now create, and the story that was past that then sparked you to the current.
Great. So I was a gold miner in West Africa. Now, you don't wake up one day and just say, hey, how can I go out to West Africa and become a gold miner? There's this path that led me there. And it was a rough path. I was a real estate guy. I did a ton of flips. I was doing some land development, doing all big deals prior to the crash. And I put every dime that I made right back into other deals. And so I never, you know, I remember one night my wife sitting there going, hey, let's pay the house off and let's do this. And I was like, no way. Are you crazy? We have to take everything and put it. So we were making a lot of money and putting it right back into other deals so that when kind of the bottom fell out in real estate, we're like, oh, crud. Like, it's going to come back, you know. And I was doing everything. I had, I don't know, 10, 12, you know, rental homes that had mortgages on them. I had put hundreds of thousands into, you know, earnest money on all these deals, and I was wholesaling deals. I wholesaled one property and made $3 million on an assignment fee. And then I'd take it and just put it all in there. So then when the bottom falls out, I find myself in this really cruddy position. And I heard about this group that was going to go to Ghana, and they had 512 kilos of gold that they were going to buy at half off. And I'm like, oh, well, it was actually a family member of mine. And so I'm like, wait, what? You're doing what? And so I grabbed a buddy of mine who was also in real estate with me, and I said, hey, how much money have you got? And we scrounged up whatever money we had, and I said, look, this guy's going out to Ghana. He's about to make $12 million flipping gold. Let's go do it too. So we're dumb enough. We just jump on a plane and go, having no idea, having never been there. So we land there, and we realized in about 5 minutes that gold deals in Ghana, they're all a scam, because Ghanaians are not stupid. They know what the price of gold is. Every little 12-year-old in the village with a phone has access to what London spot price is of gold. They're not going to give it to you at a 50% discount. So anyway, so we go over there, and it turns out that the deal that this family member was working on was a total scam. And the scam worked like this. They said, here's the gold. It's 512 kilos. Come over here, test it. And so this family member he's an attorney, smart, experienced guy. He goes over to Ghana. He hires lawyers. He did it all right. He talked to government officials. He talked to the Minerals Commission. He had military personnel. It was a scam from top to bottom. And the scam was, all they had to do was pay like the export fee or something. They put the gold on a truck and watched it go to the airport. They did everything right. And so they pay the fee of $2 million, you know, for the export fee and all that. They get on their plane. The gold supposedly gets on a different plane. They're going to meet in Miami at a refinery. They got off the plane. The gold never got off. It was an absolute scam. And so here I am. I'm in Ghana at the time and getting caught up in all this. And our taxi driver said, hey, listen, you don't buy gold like that because you're going to get scammed. You should mine the gold. That's the only way to get a discount on the gold. So we said, okay. And he said, how much money do you have? We told him. He said, okay, go with my friend here. The guy's name was Apia. And we start buying mining equipment. And we have no idea how to mine, right? I'm a real estate guy. At the time, I had 4 kids. They're all young. I have no idea what I'm doing. My wife's freaking out because she sees I'm about to start a business in Africa. And my partner and I just started going 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and literally just winging it, hiring people we thought were good, trying to rent equipment, right? Because excavators are insanely expensive. And so we're cutting deals with people we know. And we're just like limping along for like a year. Like we're in Africa, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off for a year. And then I was back at my house on one of my trips home. And I'm flipping around the channels and I see this TV show called Gold Rush. And it's on Discovery Channel. And I'm like, wait, why gold mine? And this is a show about gold mining. And I watched, they did a full episode on like a broken excavator. It's called a final drive. And I'm like, they just spent a whole episode talking about a broken piece. I'm like, I've been robbed, shot at, chased. I'm like, this is a terrible TV show. Ours has been a much better TV show. So called Discovery Channel and said, hey, you need to see what we're doing out here. I had the help of a buddy who wrote up a treatment, sent it to him. A few months later, get a phone call, and the guy, it was a producer named Sam Maynard, and he produced a show called Locked Up Abroad and a whole bunch of other stuff. And he said, when are you going back out to Ghana? And I said, a couple weeks. He goes, okay, I'm coming out there and bringing a camera guy with me. We just want to follow you and see what you guys are up to. So they follow us around, and at the end of the week, they sat down with us. We're at this little bar, and Sam looks at me across the table, and he says, I filmed a lot of stuff. I've been all over the world. I've never seen what I just saw in this past week. One of you is going to die and we wouldn't be here to film it. Welcome to Discovery Channel. It happened that fast. And then, so I had a TV show. You can watch it. It was called Jungle Gold. It's on Hulu, but you can find all the best clips on YouTube for free. And it was just the adventures of two idiot guys from Utah who've never mined before, who had the stones to go out there and try to solve our family's problems. And that was the premise, is that we were there to solve our family's problems. So we got into gold mining, and in the type of mining we were doing, it's called placer or alluvial mining, or the locals have a different name for it. But we started mining gold, making deals, and now we're on TV. And we were there under the guise of, let's solve our family's problems. But when you're there, you realize you don't have problems. The Ghanaian people have problems. You don't know what poverty is, right? We're here crying first world problems. Oh, I got it. You know, I got it. These guys are just trying to make enough money to feed their kids that day. But here's the funny part. When you get there, they all welcome you because they know that you're a Westerner and you have money. And so they want you to come and mine on their ground. Now, the funny thing is most of the chocolate you buy comes from Ghana because that's where all the cocoa plantations are. So most of the time when we go mine, you are tearing down cocoa plantations. And this is how they subsist, right? Mm-hmm. These plantations have been in their families for decades and decades. But they will let you come and tear it all down because of the promise of more money and gold. And now keep in mind, I'm on TV and the show is airing and I start getting all these comments from people all over the world. You douchebags, you guys are exploiting. And I'd get like indignant, you know, and I'm dumb and didn't realize, you know, you never fight back on Twitter. And I used to do it and I'd be like, screw you, blah, blah, blah. I'm here for my family. But then you realize when you take a step back that I was taking advantage of them. I was exploiting them in some ways because it was a short-term gain for them. If they have a cocoa plantation, they can harvest that for decades. When you go and you mine, it's a one-time fee, and it takes years and years for that cocoa plantation. And then when you're there, you realize the whole world is in Ghana. Everybody's doing what I'm doing, but at a much, much larger scale. A lot of Chinese companies, Australian companies, and much of the mining is illegal. Much of it is done with slave labor. A lot of it's almost every mine has children working there. And they're doing it out of desperation. They're doing it to provide for their families, but they are being taken advantage of, like guys like me. And again, I was a tiny, tiny drop in the bucket. There were 25,000 illegal Chinese miners in Ghana. And they all came in through the government. They didn't sneak across the border. They all came in on a flight. And so there's some collusion there. There's some corruption there with certain governments. And Ghana's a wonderful place. And there, I've met wonderful people in the government. But there are some things that exist there that allow for this to happen. And the people that suffer the most are the locals who get taken advantage of the most because of the type of mining that's done. Their rivers are polluted. Let me give you one quick story, and I don't mean to go off on this tangent, but in order to mine the cheapest and quickest, they use mercury. And I would go on a street corner like a drug deal and buy them mercury because they demanded it. And I, again, one of these things I would do where I'm like, oh, well, look, they want it. It's cheaper. You know, we can make them money faster if we use the mercury. And then you watch how they do it. So the type of mining we do, it goes through a trommel. You know, all the heavy stuff goes out on a carpet like you see on TV. Then you take that. It's called miner's moss. You take that and you dump it in a bucket. And now there's gold, but it's mixed in with all the other heavy material. So in order to get the gold out, you dump in a bunch of mercury into the bucket and the gold sticks to the mercury and then you pan out everything else. So what's left in the bottom of the bucket is this big mercury ball that contains all the gold. Well, the way they get it out is they'll dump that little amalgam of mercury and gold into like a handkerchief and then they'll close up the handkerchief and twist it and it forms like a ball and the mercury starts to seep through that handkerchief. But then they'll stick that handkerchief in their mouth, suck as hard as they can to get the rest of the mercury and spit it out. So then when it's dry, they take that little mercury gold ball and they go build a fire and they burn it. And all the mercury burns off at a lower temperature before the gold. And they just sit and breathe it in. And this happens every day on every alluvial or placer mine all over West Africa, all over South America, Peru. It happens everywhere because it's the cheapest way to do it. So rather than invest in technology and take more time, these miners, including guys like me, would just go, hey, they want it. Let's give it mercury. So there's insane destruction with the environment. Like, okay, when you mine, you dig a big pit. Most of the pits that were dug were never filled in. So I challenge any listener, anybody, go on to Google Earth and go into like a town called Obuasi in Ghana, O-B-U-A-S-I. Zoom into the river. It's called Ofin, O-F-F-I-N. Around the river, it looks like the surface of the moon. There are thousands of open pits that were never filled in, that are contaminated with fuel, that are contaminated with mercury, and they're all right next to the river. The rivers in Ghana are unusable because of decades of mining and the terrible practices that they use. And so these are the problems that I saw there. These are the problems that I contributed to. And being so caught up in my own problems, and the reaction, like you can go see like season 2, episode 1, the village threw a party for us. They killed goats and chickens. They were so happy we were there. So you get kind of jaded. You think, no, listen, they're putting out the welcome wagon. They beg us to come. When you drive through with equipment, they'll run up to your on the dirt roads to your car and go, hey, I have land. Come mine here. Because they're desperate for money. Yeah. And we took full advantage of that. So recognizing the problems that exist. And so we ended up getting thrown out of the country because season 1 was airing while we were filming season 2. There's a big robbery. There was, anyway, we got thrown. They put arrest warrants out for my partner and I and for all 25 members of the Discovery Channel crew. And we got thrown out of the country because we showed that there were 25,000 illegal Chinese miners and all these, you know, Ghanaian expats who are watching the show. Cause it was a hit show. We had worldwide. It was incredible success. But now here we are exposing what's happening. And when you expose, and they all know that the government's involved, they freaked out. So the government came after us and said we were mining illegally, which we weren't. We have permits. And they threw us out in very dramatic fashion that was all captured in the season finale of season 2. It was an episode called Run for the Border. And I know everybody's skeptical about reality TV. Is it fake? I can promise you every second. Go watch that episode. Every second of that happened in real time, and it is exactly as it happened. You know, sometimes there's clever editing and things like that, or stories that are set up. Not in this show. Like, everything that happened was real, and if you want to see the realest reality TV you've ever seen, go watch the Run for the Border episode of how the government, we were all enemy number one. We were the top story on the internet, on the radio, on TV. Everybody, nationwide manhunt looking for us, and we literally had to sneak out of the country. Discovery Channel set up a war room, snuck in a private jet, and we ran out on the tarmac, flew out. All that was real. But I set that up to say, then when you leave, right, and you realize, holy smokes, look how dysfunctional mining is. I can say with certainty that every phone that you have, every computer you have, every electric vehicle, there are some, like, for example, there's 42 elements in your phone. I can virtually guarantee that there are parts of some of those elements that were mined with great environmental destruction, where the land was never reclaimed, with child labor, and in some cases even slave labor. We are all part of the problem. This problem is incredibly big, and most people don't get it. But now there's this groundswell that's happening right now in the world of people demanding to know the origin. The provenance is what we call it, of the elements that are in their phone, that, you know, their diamond. And this has happened before with blood diamonds.
Yes.
There's that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio where warlords were using, you know, kidnapping kids and chopping off their arms and things like that. And they were fueling their rebellions with a diamond trade. So all these celebrities and everybody rallied and said, hey, listen, I don't want a blood diamond. I don't want a diamond that came at the expense of a child. So they came up with this process called the Kimberley Report. And the Kimberley Report just certifies that your diamond came from a mine that wasn't used for conflict. And they call them conflict diamonds. And so that, it became a UN resolution. 82 countries all signed on board. And so now supposedly 99.8% of all diamonds are conflict-free. Okay, now this is a paper process that you just have to kind of trust that paperwork is real. So what we are doing is essentially the Kimberley process, but it's not the scope isn't narrowed to conflicts and diamonds. It is now environmental, humanitarian, conflict, and it's diamond, gold, silver, cobalt, lithium, copper, you name it. It's an all-encompassing certification that where mines can prove that they are ethical, that they're not using child labor, they're not using slave labor, and that kind of gets to the question that you asked about what are we doing now to solve that problem. Well, this amazing thing comes along a couple year, few years ago called blockchain technology. And most people associate blockchain, they got this negative connotation, oh, blockchain is Bitcoin and it's a scam, and you know. And so I try to convince people that the technology of the blockchain technology is revolutionary. It's probably as important as the internet was, you know, 20 years ago when that came. It's going to change the world. In fact, most Fortune 500 companies already use blockchain technology. They just don't say the word blockchain technology because people think, oh, well, that's some weird Bitcoin crypto thing. It's not. The technology is solid. It allows for transparency, decentralization, verification, holding data. The blockchain itself is solid. So we decided, let's figure out how to solve problems using blockchain technology. In my background, I mined in Ghana. I mined in Guyana, which is in South America. I did mining projects in Arizona. I'm very, very familiar with the problems that exist in the mining world, but 99.9% of the world doesn't know what these problems are. They do not know. Now they're starting to know because now Joe Rogan is talking about it, and you know, New York Times and all these big publications are now asking the questions. Where do the metals that we use, where are they coming from? And now there's this massive groundswell, just like there was 20 years ago with blood diamonds. But now it's like, where does everything come from? All these companies have these net zero, we got to have all electric cars. Really? Do you know what it takes to have an electric car? Do you have any idea where the cobalt came from? You ever seen a video of the Congo of 15, 20,000 people, most of them children, mining in the Congo for a dollar a day so that you can have an electric car? And so even Elon Musk at his cobalt mines put up cameras. And if he sees children walking in, he shuts the mine down. But that can be so, you just walk around the camera. Blockchain technology allows companies now to be the benefactors and to receive an incentive for doing good. What I found is that if you want something done, give someone incentive to do it, right? If you want people to do good, pay them to be good. The blockchain allows for that. And so our mission at Element is to, number one, let people know this problem is massive. It's as big as the sex trafficking that Tim Ballard is talking about. And every time Tim Ballard went to an event, I'm virtually certain there was nobody in that room that was involved in child sex trafficking. Well, maybe there's like a couple creepy guys in the back of the room who might. But everybody donated. Everybody got out their wallets. He came to an event where there was like 100 people, and we raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for the guy, like with 150 people in a room, because he made such a compelling argument that this problem exists and it deserves to be solved. We are trying to do the same thing, but this time, everybody's complicit. If you own a phone or a computer or drive an electric car, or you are complicit in the problem, it's not your fault because that's just the way the systems are set up. But walking around with this phone came at the expense of something or someone, the environment or someone, a child, slave labor, something happened negative for you to have what we have here. I'm looking around the studio. There's electronics everywhere. And so there's a certainty, virtual certainty, that there are components in everything that I'm looking at right now that came from environmental destruction or child labor and possibly slave labor. So what we do is, number one, there's a big problem. Number two, we are all part of the problem. And number three, there's a solution that exists now to incentivize not only the people in the mining world, but everybody that owns electronics to be a part of the solution. And that's what blockchain technology.
Take me through the solution that you're talking about from, you know, a customer standpoint, but also from a corporate standpoint, and how they can adopt your new solution. So take me through that customer journey, and then also how it's applicable for companies out there.
Okay, well, this is where it gets really fun, because we have solutions for companies, we have solutions for gold miners, and not just gold miners, all miners. We have solutions for the village, and we have solutions for the public at large. And really, this doesn't work without full public support. We're trying to create a movement. We need people to get on board, which is why I'm on here with you today. We're trying to get the message out there. So what we do is try to provide an incentive for people first to be good actors, to not hire children, to not, you know, to go in and reclaim and fix the land after they've mined. Now, one thing that's important to note is that all the big players, they already do it right. There's the Barricks, there's the Newmonts. They have way too much to lose to do something stupid like hiring children or to, you know, let cyanide, you know, leak into the rivers. Like, there are good actors in this space. Why? Because there's a massive financial incentive for them to be good actors. Now, there's other people in this space. There's this huge swath in the middle in Central America, South America, all over West and South Africa, who their incentive is to get through as much land as possible to increase their gold yield, and they don't care what else happens. So we have to address that. We have to address, okay, how do we create an incentive for them to not be bad actors in this space? And so the blockchain technology, we look at four different solutions. So we first address the miner. What can we do to help a miner to make money by leaving gold in the ground or by harvesting the gold or silver, whatever, more efficiently? So we do that in a couple ways. Number one, our first product where we are looking at, so if I we have, I don't know, 8 mining partners right now who've agreed to stop mining the entire mine or a portion of the mine. And they've only agreed to do that because there's a financial upside for them to do that. And so we have created mechanisms that allow us to monetize a miner or provide a financial benefit to a miner to not mine. Here's how we do it. Product number one is we do carbon credits, carbon offsets. So there's this huge push right now, all these ESG initiatives, all these companies that have come up with these pledges to be net zero. And it's an exploding market. We were just at Consensus out in Austin, Texas, and there were multiple speakers all talking about these carbon credits. And a couple of them projected that the carbon credit market by 2035 will be $1 trillion. Right now it's you know, many billions, but it's exploding. And so we take this idea. First of all, there's many problems with carbon credits. A lot of them are fake. A lot of them, Delta Airlines has just got hit with a class action lawsuit because they're claiming to be the first net zero airline because of all the carbon offsets that they buy. And they went in and someone did an independent study and realized that most of them, like 80%, were fake because it's easy to fake it. The blockchain solves that problem. The blockchain makes sure that when a carbon credit, when it's tokenized and put on a blockchain, it's only sold once. It's verified. And by the way, we were just talking about Uber and Sean, who were the previous podcast that you did. They have created devices that allow the input into the blockchain of these carbon credits to be verified. So now, not only are we can solve the problem of carbon credits by tokenizing it and adding it to the blockchain, but we can now go to these miners and say, listen, we are going to create a carbon offset program on your farm. Instead of you mining this, we're going to fund a project to plant. We're going to do a farm, and we're going to hire the locals who can come in. And now, instead of them being gold miners and getting the gold out of the ground once, they can now manage and farm this section that we're building on your gold mine. And now they've got residual income coming in for 40 years because it's these 40-year projects. And when we sell these carbon credits, you make a revenue share off of that. So you don't have to do the expense and the risk of mining because it's very expensive. When I was a gold miner, it was like 85%. Like if I had to spend $1,000, to make 150, it's like 85% is the cost. So we reduce the risk and liability of the gold miner and allow him not only to be monetized by making a revenue share off of the carbon credits, but to be a guy that's doing good, to get the locals on your side, to provide jobs.
I had a question regarding the percentage of the land. So let's talk about you are helping this mine and you say, let's minimize the amount of gold that's extracted from the land, right? Because not all gold is being used, right?
Sure.
Because there's basically just gold and then there's value that's in the gold. Well, what you're doing is you're extracting the value from the land without actually extracting any of the elements from the land.
Yes.
Through technology, right, that you guys have had. And then what I would be curious as well is to talk about more of the elements that are being extracted that are actually needed, like copper and other, you know, mines that are very important that we need the elements
and
we have.
And we've making a bit, we made a big pivot. 2 years ago, we said, let's just stop mining and let's just digitize it. And then the problem is
that's
technology.
Difficult.
You can't do that. You know, you can't use digital gold to make your computer work or make your phone work. So we had a big pivot. So we have right now 6 mines that have committed to not mine at all. And we've given them, we did a deal with them to where, and I'll explain that in just a second. But and we have that gold in reserve to do in the future, like a actual gold-backed token, right? But then it's like, well, if there's a redemption on that, then you have to dig it up eventually someday. And so there were some issues with that. But we have like $600 billion in committed assets to Element United under contract, where Element has ownership and partial ownership in all these mines. But we pivoted because the bigger issue right now is all the terrible things that are happening. And we thought we have to address the stuff that's coming up out of the ground because, number one, we have to have it. If we want to have technology, if we want to continue to have the civilization that we have right now and to allow these other third world countries to come up and advance, and it's they need computers, they need phones, you must bring the stuff up out of the ground, whether it's gold, copper, lithium, you name it. It has to come up out of the ground. So we pivoted to say, listen, let's address that first. Let's number one, figure out how we can incentivize miners to be good, to stop hiring children.
Ethically,
yeah. And so our first product is called the ESG, which is the ethical, or well, we call it the Element Ethical Mining Certification. Now we just kind of shortened it. And so that NFT allows companies to commit to not engage in certain things, to not engage in child labor, slave labor. And we commit to them that we will give them visibility on the blockchain to everybody downstream that they're trying to sell from, to sell to. And then there's multiple layers to that. Number one, you have to have the government that supports this, the government where these mines are. So we have a team right now in Kenya and Tanzania meeting with government officials, getting their support for this NFT that allows these mines to prove or to commit to that they will no longer engage in these things, and they have a reclamation plan for the mine. But there's one thing that's called like initiative fatigue, to where people are just sick of like all these, you know, the West African Clean Water Initiative, the environmental, blah, blah, blah. But this NFT will allow them to show what initiatives they're already a part of, because there's a lot of people out there all trying to be good. So the NFT is, number one, there's 3 key things they must commit to: no child labor, no slave labor, and environmental reclamation. And then the NFT also hosts all the other things that they are already committed to. And that NFT can be viewed on the blockchain, so that if a buyer, like K Jewelers, wants to make sure that they're buying ethically, they can see if this specific mine, and they can trace it, right? So there's also a supply chain component to it, so that when it comes up out of the ground and then it goes to a refinery and then it goes to a wholesaler, that provenance is tracked along the blockchain. So they can see, okay, I want to make sure that these diamonds, gold, platinum came from a mine that wasn't using children. And so our timing on this NFT is great, because now there's this big push by jewelry stores and by the community to not own or to not buy these elements that were harvested either illegally or with child labor. So product, and I know I talked about the carbon credits first, but really the first product is this ethical mining certification that proves that these mines are ethical and that they've committed to certain things. Now, can they fake it? Can they cheat it? Is there a guarantee that they might sneak a 16-year-old? Obviously, we have things in place that allow us to do spot checks and to make sure that, number one, the mine itself is ethical. And we hope that as people demand that their elements are ethical, that it will push out the bad actors. That's why all the illegal diamond miners are gone, because nobody will buy them without that Kimberley report that says it's not a conflict diamond. It pushed out everybody. And guess who supported this Kimberley process? It was De Beers, because they thought, you know what, if we can get everybody to adopt this, all of our competition is gone, because nobody will buy illegal diamonds anymore. And it worked perfectly. So we are trying to get bigger gold mines to support what we're doing, to say, listen, let's get rid of the riffraff who are giving you guys a bad reputation and making people question your mining practices. Let's push them out. And so we do that through the blockchain technology allows us to create these NFTs that give each mine downstream visibility so that the buyers can confirm that, yes, these guys are committed to safe practices, to environmental reclamation, that give back initiatives that support the villagers. And so that's one of the ways that we, and we do that when that product for the first year is going to be free. We're building it now, but we don't want to charge people for that. We're just saying, listen, if you want greater downstream visibility, you're going to create, you want this NFT, but you can't, you know, it's hard for people to pay for it. So we're going to give it away for free. And then when they renew it next year, then we'll start charging them for it. So that's one of the ways that we can use blockchain to let people want to be good actors in this space. And then the next one would be the carbon credits. And then we're gamifying gold mining. So one of the other ways, so I'm giving you real world examples. And so this first carbon credit project we're doing is in a mine with a guy out of St. Louis named Jay in Tanzania. So here's why Jay likes us. We went to Jay and we said, Jay, we need land. He gave us 1,000 acres. We're doing a big carbon credit project. We're building a farm. And so he's going to make revenue from the carbon credits. And these are tokenized. These are on the blockchain. They're verified. They're real. People can come and buy these with confidence, knowing that they're not double sold. The next thing we're doing, and this is where it gets really fun for us, is we're taking that same piece of land and we're doing an assay on it, finding out where the gold is, how much is there. And then we're building a digital version of that piece of ground, and we're making a game out of it so that now it's a free play-to-earn game that people can play on their phone, and they can play this game, and it matches the attributes of a real gold mine. But the real gold mine is never mined. They are mining, and when they find in their game gold that matches up with the location of where it actually is in real life, they earn our token. And so now we can bring in tens of thousands of people playing this game. It creates utility for the token because they earn the token, then they can upgrade, you know, to a bigger excavator or something that digs deeper using the in-game token. But the cool thing about that is that we're going to have these initiatives with built into the game so that when we as a community play this game and we hit a certain objective, it unlocks a humanitarian project. We go do a water well, or we go reclaim a few acres of land. And so now the community is playing a free play-to-earn game. They're earning our token, but they're also part of the solution. And so that's how we use this technology to bring tens of thousands of people into this environment so that they're earning. They didn't have to pay anything for it. Now, there will be some in-game upgrades where they can pay to, you know, yes, upgrade some things. But now they're earning our token, and as a community, we are reaching these objectives, and then we go out and we do a humanitarian project that we earned through the game, and we film it and let the community know, here's how you're part of the solution. So
your technology will help to legitimize what the elements in the ground, and in essence, you are just shifting the value between physical and then creating it to be digital.
That's right. But not in the way most people think. Now, people go, well, why don't you just create a coin that's backed by the gold in the ground? That's still an option for us because, like I said, we've got $600 billion in in-ground assets. But right now, we wanted to put that on pause and get creative.
Yes.
And now replace the gold that comes up out of the ground with a token, a digital token that has some utility. So we talk about the carbon credits. These big companies that are going to come in and buy these tokenized carbon credits, the only way they can buy it is with the Element token. So if I am earning tokens by playing this game, I know there's the possibility that I can sell it on the market to Delta or Nestle or someone that's going to come in and buy it because they have to buy the token from someone,
yes,
in order to buy the carbon credits. And that also leads into why people run nodes. To be a part of our blockchain, you buy a node. It's a software download. You run a node. That blockchain node is supporting all the products that we're building on it, like the NFT, like the gaming, like the supply chain solution and the carbon credits. All that runs on the blockchain that you support, and you receive rewards for it. So now, what's my incentive to run a node? Well, number one, I'm supporting a great cause. Number two, I'm going to get a lot of these tokens every day. Will the tokens have value? I have no idea. That's your risk, right? Is that you buy a node from us, you run it. Will it ever have value? I don't know. But we are hoping to create utility for that token by making people come in and buy it so they can buy the carbon credits, buy the in-game usage of it. And listen, we lead with, let's solve a problem first. Yeah. Solve a problem, help people, and let everything else take care of itself. And people ask me, friends, family, Scott, what's this token going to be worth? I have no idea. It may be worth, what's your risk when you buy a node from us, the cost of the node?
Yeah.
Because you're going to get all these tokens, and if it doesn't ever come, it doesn't ever have value, then it's never going to have a value. But we just believe that the better we are at what we do, the better we solve solutions, then everything else takes care of itself. And that's the beauty of being a node owner. You have your own community. You have voting rights. You know, the nodes and the blockchain are over here doing their thing, and we're over on the other side, you know, just trying to solve problems. So it's been fun.
Explain to me just a little bit more about the vision that you have for the company. And, of course, I think that you're – yeah, let's take a look at the phases and timelines right now.
Sure.
I think that'll be really helpful for the crowd out there.
Sure. So the first phase, because we have all these mining partners and the carbon credit market is exploding, we're all in on the carbon credits first. We are working – we're trying to get 10 to 20 projects. That's hard. That's daunting. Not all carbon credit projects are evil. Some equal. Some you start from scratch, like we're doing in Tanzania, and that takes a lot of time and money. Others, we just partner up with other farms that are already doing things and teach them how to create carbon offsets, carbon credits, and then how to tokenize them and how to get them into the market so we create more revenue for these miners and for the villages around the mines. So product number one, as far as when it's going to be released, the tech is almost done. We're just making partnerships with, because you have to get the government support, you know, when we're working in all these other countries. We're looking at Q4 to have our first carbon credit project out there. And again, the purpose of that, building it on our own blockchain, is so that the native token, it's ELMT, it's not out there yet, but that token must be purchased by these companies to buy the carbon credit. So end of this year, we're looking to have our first carbon credit project. The game development is happening now. So we're hoping Q1 of next year we'll have our first version of the game. And then the element certification, the NFT, that can come out. That's probably in line with Q4, early Q1 of next year. And so that is in conjunction with something, a product we call the E-Vault, which is more of the supply chain solution. So, but the nodes you can buy now. The nodes you can turn on and run right now and start earning tokens today. But as far as product, so we have two different. So the node we want to sell to everybody because everybody can be part of the solution to help us solve
these
problems.
Can you explain a little bit deeper about a node?
Sure.
And the definition of that?
Yeah, the node is just an access point into the Element blockchain. It's a software download. There's no hardware that you have to run. But when you download a node, it gives our blockchain access to your computer's computing power. And it allows you, because a blockchain is a decentralized network of thousands of computers all over the world verifying transactions. That's super simple,
yes.
Insufficient explanation. When you buy a node, it turns your computer into part of our blockchain. Now, most of our node owners don't run it on their own computer. They'll put it on like a third party so that it runs all the time. And if they lose internet connection, you know, they don't want their node to stop. But they will host it on some sort of server like Volter. But when you run a node for us, you are now part of our blockchain. And we're trying to get – we have nodes running right now in, I think, 40 countries. So we've got – and we haven't even started like this is our first podcast. We haven't even had our, coming out party. We're just trying to get the message out now. But we've had previous projects in our ecosystem that went really well, and people just bought – you know, nodes because they said, oh, hey, these guys are involved with these guys. You know, I want to get involved in the next project.
What is the cost of a node?
So the node price right now for us, there's two ways to engage. We have a light node, which is $27, or we have a full smart node that's $2,700. And the distribution is equal to the price. And so a light node will give you 1/100th of the distribution of a smart node. And right now, just with our tokenomics, each node is kicking out somewhere between, it changes every day, but somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 tokens per day for a smart node, and then 1/100th of that for a light node. And so running nodes is great because you're helping us to solve these problems by building out our blockchain, and you're being rewarded for it. And we use these nodes. we give nodes out to these miners. We've got multiple miners out there running hundreds of our nodes because they've committed to do certain things. And so when I talk about the blockchain as an incentive, they're looking at this going, oh, great, I run these nodes. I'm going to have, you know, X million of these tokens. And they're in the same boat. They hope it's worth something, you know, someday. And as we build out our company, we hope, heck, we hope it's worth something too. But so a node is how everybody can participate with us. You know, and we understand that a smart node is, it's expensive. It's not cheap. But if you want to start with a light node, no problem. Start with a light node. And when you can upgrade to a bigger node, do it. And so our distribution that's running right now, we're just excited to give everybody the opportunity to be part of what we're doing. There has to be real utility for there's. So the way we look at it, because there's so many projects that are rug pulls and that are scammy, we just start with let's solve a problem.
Yes.
Let's build great tech. So number one, we have identified the problem. We've got the technology to solve it, and now let's build products that actually solve. And so we're confident the gaming world and the carbon credit world are explosive. So we've picked products, you know, that allow us to have growth, that allow the company to be able to sell carbon credits to hundreds of companies, that allow tens of thousands of people to come into our gaming world. And that's really, we're using the game as a way to get our message out. Because if it's a free game and you're earning our token, we want to tell the message, hey, guess what? Guys, we just hit this objective. We're going to go build a school or a hospital out here. And that just lets
it's a great people, idea.
And you have to incentivize people to care, right? Which that sounds cynical, but you do. People, we want people to care, but the blockchain gives us another way to accelerate the people caring about problems if they know that there's an incentive in it for them.
I see what is happening right now, and there's a lot of this happening in multiple industries, but you've got a merger of both old and the new, and you've got what has been done and what will be done currently with the value that is in the land. And then you're just marrying that with a pretty nice package, I would say, that is going to create a lot of value for a lot of people and solve really the problem that you were seeing when you started to mine.
Great,
you know?
great way to put it. Great way to sum it up. And we're seeing how blockchain is being used to just incentivize good behavior. There's all these health apps out there, right? That now you hook up your smartwatch and you can get rewarded for working out or for following a diet, and all that data gets put into them. So we're just taking that same concept and trying to bring attention to a massive problem. Again, let everybody know we're all part of the problem, but hey, we can all be rewarded for being part of the solution. Whether that's a gamer that just wants to come in and earn a few tokens by playing a free play-to-earn game, or whether it's somebody that wants to run
convert
nodes.
Their mine into a digital empire, basically.
Exactly. Now I wish I could say that, hey, converting, making digital gold or backing gold with a token, that's not our idea. There's tons of people that do that. But we just got creative. We just wanted to come up with a way that you know, anybody can go get a gold mine and, you know, create a security and digitize it, right, and have a coin that's backed by in-ground gold. We'll probably have a product like that shortly. But we wanted to get more direct, right? We wanted our products to have a direct impact on locals, to really influence directly the miners, and to give a solution for the rest of the world that can come in and earn our token by being part of the solution.
More of a holistic point of view.
Yeah.
Well, man, this has been a wonderful podcast. A lot of information.
I've just shown up and just blabbed. I apologize. I've heard some of your other podcasts, and you talk more, and I feel bad because I just showed up and just blah, blah, blah. But thank you for allowing me to talk. I'm pretty passionate about what we're doing, and I just appreciate your
time.
Well,
as an entrepreneur, right, once again, passion is number one, and we're solving problems with the passion that you have. And, you know, that's what I believe our community is about. So once again, thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Founders Odyssey podcast. This has been I think it's 45 or 46, can't remember, but this has been Scott Lomu with Element United. Real quick, before we leave, how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, elementunited.com. Very simple. Just go to our website. You can buy a node. You can watch what we're doing. You can get updates on our product. And then there are links in there to join our Discord. And we've got a pretty good community going right now.
Awesome. And lastly, Is there anything that you are looking for as far as help or right now in the positioning of your company?
We are trying to get our message out there.
Okay.
I think the message is worthy, and it just doesn't have to lead to you getting a note or anything. We just want people to know there's a problem out there and we should probably all do something about it. That's really what, you know, and we try very hard to identify that problem and to explain it on our website. So send people to the website. Let people okay. know and let's start sharing this message.
Element United. Go check it out. And thank you so much for tuning in to the Founders Odyssey Podcast.